We need to give the credit to Fred. Fred is the one who is making us play. He's the guy who is calling the plays for us and putting us in the right spots to play.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeball. If it is the first time you listen to this show, welcome. I am the lead fantasy analyst over at Basketball Monster. That's the correct word, so make sure you go and check out all the work we got over there with our season-long projections and DFS stuff as well. Check us out at Basketball Monster and, of course, over on my Twitter account. We have got action from Monday to talk about. There were six games and lots of wacky weirdness going on right across the NBA landscape. And then there are seven games for Tuesday for us to preview. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it. Indeed. The monstrous line of the night. I could have had anyone from this game, from this Pelicans and Rockets game. There was just giant lines all over the place. I went with Jrue Holiday of the New Orleans Pelicans. 37 points for Jrue, 4 triples, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals and a block, and 16 of 21 from the field. That is out of control. 1 of 2 from the free throw line. Holiday is the 13th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. I don't think many people would have expected that. He is shooting at just an insane level over the course of the entire season, really 49%, but 54% over those last 8 games, 42% from 3. He's still getting a level of assists. It has dropped off a little bit since Rajon Rondo has returned, but he's still handling the ball. He's getting steals in bunches. He's blocking shots. He's blocked 8 shots across those last 8 games. He's hitting almost 3 triples a game. He is absolutely thriving in this role alongside Rondo. I thought it was a bad move to get Rondo in. I've made no secret of my feelings about what Rondo has, but you know what? It's been fine. It's worked totally fine. Holiday has absolutely thrived in this role, and he is killing it at the moment. And I think there's a real decent chance he's the 37th ranked player for the season. I think there's a chance that he finishes at that level. He's probably not going to remain a top 15 guy, which he is over the last 2 weeks. That's probably an unrealistic expectation because he's playing 39 minutes a game in that time. And again, that shooting, true shooting of 64%. I don't think that's going to be able to stick, but the scoring load, the 3-point volume might be able to at least remain close to that level. And he should have some really, really strong value for the rest of the season. And Drew's a guy that I've always liked. He's a guy that has injuries and family issues derail plenty of his seasons like last year. And he's been really solid from a fantasy point of view. His last 4 seasons, he's been the 33rd, 26th, 50th, and 39th ranked player across fantasy leagues this year. Again, he's the 37th ranked guy. He's just that same sort of guy, but these last 2 weeks have been an absolute monster from Jrue Holiday. And really like him and glad to see him doing as well as he is at the moment. The waiver wire line of the night goes to the player playing alongside Jrue Holiday, and that is Etuan Moore, who is, as amazing as it is, shooting at an even higher rate than what Holiday is. He has been insane recently. 36 points with 6 triples, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and 15 of 20 from the field. Over the last 2 weeks, you wouldn't believe it that Etuan Moore is the 50th ranked player in fantasy, playing 37 minutes a game. This Pelicans team is so thin, he is going to have to play 30 plus minutes a game for the rest of the year, but he's averaging almost 18 points and 3 triples. He doesn't do a huge amount else. So there's a little bit of a warning alert here with these numbers for Moore. 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.9 steals. And over the last 2 weeks, he's shooting 59% from the field. He's shooting 63% from 3. Now, he has had some pretty decent 3-point shooting seasons recently. When he was with the Bulls, he shot 45%. Great. Last year, 37%. Neither of those is 63%. So that's not going to stick. Over the last month, he's shooting 53%. Also not going to stick. And when when those numbers do drop, his scoring comes down, his three-point shooting comes down, his field goal percentage comes down, and he doesn't have much to back it up in those other categories. So that's somewhat of a warning sign in terms of his value. I think he can have 12-team league value the rest of the way. I don't think that he is a solid top 50 player. I don't even think that he is a super strong top 100 guy, because again, those numbers will have to regress. But over the course of the season, he's still shooting 54%, which is an insane level for a guy playing on the wing. I don't have full confidence that he's going to be able to stick it at that sort of level, especially considering he's a 61% free throw shooter, which is a really, really low level for a guy shooting that hot from deep. There's going to be some pretty aggressive regression coming for Moore, I believe. I don't think it's necessarily going to become, he's not going to be a 32.3% shooting guy this season, but he's also not going to remain as a 47% guy or a 63% guy. Like, those numbers, they just have no ability of being able to stick. The minutes, sure, that can definitely remain in that mid to low 30s range. But again, we look at these things, when something stands out so badly like dog's balls, like these field goal and three-point percentage does for Moore, and when there's going to be a pretty hard regression coming, when there's nothing else there to really back it up, like two assists and 2.6 rebounds with a steal, that's not getting it done. And then if he goes down and averages 12 points on 44% shooting for the next 2 months, then you have no interest in that in a 12-team league. So for now, grab him. The minutes are fine, but there is going to be some pretty hardcore regression at some point, and just be aware that this level, it won't be able to be kept up. As good as it's been, and I really like Etuan Moore, it's just not going to be able to stick at this sort of a level, which he currently is at. I never, ever thought that I'd be giving the young gun of the night to this bloke, because I've been a fairly decent critic of him as a player, but you know what? When they put up a good line, they get the young gun. And that is Andy Harrison of the Memphis Grizzlies. 16 points for Harrow, 2 triples, 1 rebound, 4 assists and 2 steals. He only took 6 shots, but he made 5 of them, and he was 4 of 4 from the line. He is starting at the moment. He's playing decent minutes. Over the last 4 games, it's 29 minutes per game, and he's the 112th ranked player. And he's doing it shooting some pretty shit percentages, which is basically his calling card. 29 from 3, 39 from the field, 49 true shooting. Yeah, nothing good there, but 20 assists across his last 4 games, almost 2 steals per game in that time, half a block, half a 3. There's a little bit of value. I don't think we should be reading a huge amount into what Andy Harrison is currently doing. I think that he could very well remain the starter when Wayne Seldon, whenever he comes back, who knows what the hell's going on with that injury. Whenever Seldon comes back and Conley comes back, that's going to be somewhat of an impact for Harrison. But Fizdale loved Harrow. Bickerstaff appears to love him as well. So the minutes are fine. There's just not really much to see here with Harrison. I don't think there's much to see with him long-term in Dynasty. I don't think there's much to see with him this season in terms of rest of season value. But it's a nice little 14 to 16 team league type stream action where he's starting, getting you some, you know, sneaky assists, which is going to have value in 14 team leagues. As long as he remains starting and playing 28 to 29 minutes a game, which might be for the next week, next 2 weeks, whatever it is, he's worth having somewhat of a look at. Because unlike Etuan Moore, it's not like all his numbers are coming on crazy high shooting. Now, he is over the last 2 weeks shooting at 48%. But again, in the last 4 games where he started, it's only 39%, and that's pushed him up to the 112th ranked player despite the poor shooting. So there is a level of a sustainability in some of what he's doing, especially the assists. His last 4 games, and he started 3 of those, 5 assists, 7 assists, 4 assists, and 4 assists, and he's played at least 26 minutes in all 4 of those games, 29, 29, 26, and 30. Getting steals in at least 2 steals in all but one of those games. He had 2, 1, 2, and 2. Only scored in double figures once in that little stretch, but it's the assists, it's the steals, and it's the fact that he's getting some minutes that does give him a little bit of value. But again, it's more for deeper style leagues rather than your 12-team format or anything along those lines. The dud of the night, it goes to Harrow's teammate, and it's Tyreke Evans. It's not a horrendous night from Evans, 11, 2, and 3. It's not too bad. But 5 of 17 from the field is a disastrous field goal percentage night. He had 0 steals and blocks, and he didn't go to the free throw line at all. I don't think we need to be too worried about Tyreke. He's the 50th ranked player this season. He's 51st over the last month. There'll be a couple of real dud games in there. He is averaging 18, 5, and 4. A steal, 2 threes, hitting his threes at 40%, which has come down. So we were expecting this regression from Evans on his threes, but he's still been able to produce numbers in other areas, and that's a really good sign for him. He's been probably the waiver wire pickup of the season so far. When Mike Conley comes back, there'll be somewhat of an impact, but not really, because he was putting up numbers even before Conley got hurt. So it's not a sell high situation because he's going to suddenly drop outside the top 100 when Conley returns. He's fine. It was just a stinker of a night in terms of his field goal percentage and his shooting. And nothing awesome there, but his previous two games, he had 54% on 24 shots and 53% on 19 shots. So some big, big field goal percentage nights for him prior to this one where he stunk it up a bit. He's the dud. No big deal. Doesn't really mean anything as we move forward. And he'll be a pretty strong 50 to 75 rank guy, I would imagine, for the rest of the season. Good old Tyreke Evans. We have got six games from Monday that we're going to break down now, and then we're going to head into the DFS portion of the show and preview the seven games we've got for Tuesday. So let's get stuck straight into that right now. The first game we'll take a look at is the Memphis Grizzlies taking on the Miami Heat. The Grizzlies are a real shit show. We've talked about them with two of those guys there, with Harrison and Tyreke, but they are struggling. They only put up 82 points against the Heat, who dropped 107 on them. They are struggling. You feel like there is going to be something go down. Marc Gasol is, let's be honest, he is angling for a way out of Memphis. There is almost no way you can deny it. Now, whether he gets that out of there or not, it remains to be seen. I would be a little bit hesitant to suggest he is going to be traded. I don't think he wants to be there. And I think he's trying to do stuff to get himself out of Memphis that's based on nothing that he has said or no inside knowledge, just sort of reading what's going on and seeing him speak. He does not appear happy there. And, you know, I think that he would welcome a change. Whether it's coming, I'd be really highly doubtful about that. Let's talk Miami. Kelly Olynyk started. He got into really early foul trouble, ended up with only 18 minutes. So that meant Bam Adebayo played 23. He had 14 and 4 with a pair of steals and a pair of blocks and really fantastic percentages for Bam. So a really good night for him. But on most nights, he's not going to shoot 83%. He's not going to rack up 4 combined steals and blocks. And he's probably not going to play 23 minutes when Olynyk only plays 18. So while that's nice and he does have this deep league value while Whiteside's out, I don't think that that Bam Adebayo is becoming a standard league ad. Tyler Johnson, one of the more frustrating players there is at the moment, scoreless until the start of the fourth quarter, and then dropped 14 points in that fourth quarter, had 4 triples, 5 rebounds and 2 blocks, in played 32 minutes. His value is all over the place. He's one of those guys, and I say this all the time, but if you showed me a screenshot of your roster and Tyler Johnson was on it, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, that's fine. But I wouldn't be saying, but then on the flip side, if you showed me your waiver wire, I wouldn't be going, my God, please grab Tyler Johnson. I feel like he's that guy that, you know, if he didn't have a big last quarter, it would have been an absolutely shitful performance. And this is sort of what he does. And yeah, his minutes are a little bit up in the air. When Deion Waiters has a stinker, like, you know, he wasn't great in this one, Deion, even though he shot 80%, he was bothered by elbow soreness. It gives Johnson some extra playing time. And over the last 2 weeks, he is the 72nd ranked player. But like so many of these players who have this surge, he's shooting 55% over that time and 46% from three. Whereas over the course of the season, he's at 41% from the field and 37% from three. So there's a significant amount of regression that's likely coming in his game. I don't feel confident about his minutes on any given night. I definitely don't feel confident about his shooting. So he's not someone that I look at as an automatic ad guy. Now, I did get a request for this for James Johnson's music because he put up an okay line. 11-3-3 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. You know what? Maybe that does deserve the music. Not quite on the level that Jim was putting up the numbers with last season, but he's still been pretty strong. For all the disappointment we think that Johnson's been giving us, he's still the 78th ranked player this year in less than 28 minutes per game, giving us over 4 assists, 5 rebounds, a steal, 0.8 blocks, and almost a 3 a game. So he's almost at a triple one. He's shooting 50% from the field. He's been fine. There's been a bit of a blip recently, but I think he is fine for what he is, a guy that's a back-end guy on your 12-team or 10-team roster and should be owned in all those formats. Joshy Richardson, only 30 minutes, but 17 and 5 with 3 triples. He should be owned, while the Iron Shoulder had 19, 5 and 5, and he didn't really need to extend himself given how much of a spanking it was. The Duke knocked in 4 triples, one of the elite 3-point streamers out there, while Justice Winslow, he had a big game the game before. Unsurprisingly, did jack shit in this one. On to the Memphis Grizzlies, Jermichael Green. People had big hopes for this guy. I don't rate him. I don't think he's a good NBA player. I don't think he's a good fantasy player at all. He played 32 minutes and had 10 and 4. He is a guy that if you showed me your roster, I'd probably say, well, what's the point? Like, what are you dealing with Jermichael Green? There's no upside. He's just a very limited guy. And he's not actually providing good value. Stream it. I would much rather use his roster spot on a streaming position. I'd rather grab his teammate Chandler Parsons in that spot, who I am 100% convinced is going to be a 12-team league player when the calendar is in 2018. He played 24 minutes here. He had 9, 4, and 5 with 2 steals and a block. The shooting wasn't there, but he is... We forget that in his last season in Dallas, for the last 3 months of the year, he was a top 50 player. He was doing everything. He was scoring. He was getting assists. He was doing defensive stuff. Now, he's never going to get back to that level. But he can be a top 100 guy for the last 2 to 3 months of this season. I feel pretty confident about that. Mario Chalmers has played 11 minutes in each of the last 2 games. He was scoreless in that time. When Mike Conley comes back, is he out of the rotation completely so that Harrison can take that role? Probably. Well, Dylan Brooks. Remember Dylan Brooks? Man, I've really got to blow my entire fab load all over this bloke. You get it all out there. Man, look at what he did in his first game. It's unlikely and I gave that analogy. Remember when Wade Baldwin did it last year? Same Memphis thing. And it's the same with Brooks. He's been good, better than you could expect for a second round draft pick. But everyone was really, really filleting him pretty hard. And it's just not happening. He's still starting, but his minutes are down, like 18 a game recently. He's playing a lesser role. He put up 1 rebound, almost the Tony Snell. And he's going to lose that job to Chandler Parsons. I can 100% guarantee you that he will lose that job at some point. Ben McLemore continues to just be an absolute ass fest. He is just terrible at this point. And I had some hopes for him, but they've quickly dissipated. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Houston Rockets. What an absolute... I don't even know the best way of phrasing what this game was. It was out of control. I've already talked about Drew, who played 41 minutes. Etwan Moore played 42. There were shenanigans aplenty. Anthony Davis was ruled out. We heard that before DFS lineup locks. That's fine. And then Dante Cunningham was supposed to start. And then literally a minute before the game was about to tip, the old switcheroo was pulled and Darius Miller was said starting. And then about a minute after that, it was, Dante Cunningham is now questionable to play with a knee issue. And then about a minute after that, Cunningham's actually out. Now, he's had problems with his knees in the past. So I'm imagining that in warm-ups that he tweaked it, and that's what happened with him. We had no Dante. We had no Davis. We had no Jameer Nelson. We had no Tone Allen. So the Pelicans were running an extraordinarily small rotation. They had a 7-man rotation. And then they had 2 two-way guys, Jalen Jones and Charles Cook. Now, Cookie played just 14 seconds and Jones played 9 minutes. So in essence, they were playing a 7-man rotation. And those 6th and 7th men were Ian Clark and Omer Asik, who was putrid once again, Asik. So we saw huge minutes from lots of these guys. And weirdly, out of the 5 starters, Boog Cousins played the fewest minutes. He had 24, 14, and 8. Rondo had a triple-double, almost the fat-faced Ray Felton triple-double, 13, 12, and 12. But he hit 3 triples, didn't get any steals, but another strong Rondo night. While Darius Miller, who got the start, 4 assists from Darius Miller. You might as well frame that. That's not going to happen too often. 10 points with 2 triples in 39 minutes. But they were hurting, and this game was super entertaining. Big lines all over the place. I didn't get to watch it all live because I was watching the Bulls actually take on the Celtics, and I went back and watched a bit of it later, but tuned into the last quarter and watched that. And they were putting up, it was just an insane game to watch. And on the Houston side, it was almost as ridiculous. Jim Harden, 35 minutes, 26, 1, and 17 with 6 steals and 4 triples on 50% shooting. He was bothered by a calf injury, so maybe he's not going to play. Played, didn't have his quite the same level of explosion, but him one-on-one is just, it's so good. He is so good to watch. He was nailing pull-up threes right into Marcus Cousins' face. He just does whatever he wants, whenever he wants. Chris Paul had 29 and 6 with 3 steals, a block, and 3 triples. Another bonkers night from him. But the man in the middle, Clint Capela, what the hell? 24 minutes only because D'Antoni says, we needed more minutes out of him. And one thing I'll say to you, Mike, is that you control the minutes, but I do understand why he didn't play in those minutes because apparently he was struggling with his conditioning, with his ability to get the breaths in. So he was struggling. That's the reason why he isn't playing these big minutes. But in 24 minutes, Capela had 28 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 blocks on 13 of 14 shooting. Pretty much just alley-oops, just Harden to Capela lobs. And that's why I was super high on him last year before he broke his leg. I'm super high on him this year because Harden is just going to make it unbelievably easy for him. That's exactly what's happening. He has been an astonishing value pick so far this season. And if I bring him up and have a look exactly where he's ranked, it's out of control. And most people would have only drafted him in a punt free throw situation as well. He's a 34th ranked player so far this season, averaging 14 and 11 with almost two blocks on 68% shooting and a steal per game. I really, really like Capella. His restricted free agency is going to be super interesting. Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon revenge game. 36 minutes for 27 points with five triples. He had really, really struggled before this game since the return of Chris Paul. Didn't do anything else and shot at 75%. So we can chalk this one up to a significant outlier. And he's not going to be a must-own 10-team league guy. Probably still a 12-team league guy. But if you're going to say that's a revenge game, then you've got to have a look at Ryan Anderson, who had 5 points in 18 minutes. And when people talk, you know, people love throwing revenge games at me, but when I talk about it, this is what I mean, is that we only talk about the ones that go well, and then we don't look in the same game and say, Ryan Anderson, revenge game, shit the bed. Like, that's the thing. And this is two games in a row where Ando has not played 20 minutes as they go to these small lineups, and they put PJ Tucker in at center. It limits Capella, and Anderson just isn't playing. And this is something that Kyle spoke about at the beginning of the season when we discussed the differences in our rankings. He said, I think that Anderson's going to get really eliminated and they're going to run a lot of PJ Tucker out there. And that's what's starting to happen. You know, Tucker's not a fantasy option, but Ando is not a 12-team league guy. He just isn't. Trev Ariza, 13-2-2. I don't think that he's a must-own 10-team league guy, Ariza. Now, people will definitely push back against me there. I just see really zero upside in what he does. He's still putting up okay numbers, and I probably would own him in a 10-team league. But his value is coming really from the threes and steals. They're his only positive categories apart from free throws, which is, you know, at a really high rate, 93%, when he is a guy that's like a 74% guy last year. So there is a level of regression coming there. But he's not doing much else apart from that. And I'm just not certain that he's going to really get too much better from here. I'd probably keep him. Me saying he's not a 10-team league guy, I'm not dropping him. But I don't rate him as highly as what some other people do. The Chicago Bulls.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
I'm playing it for a different reason. Because the Bulls are now playing themselves out of the number one pick spot. The return of Nikola Mirotic is making them unbeatable. They smash the Celtics, proving that the Bulls do not need Rajon Rondo to knock off the Celtics, contrary to popular belief that the only reason that they lost that playoff series last season is because Rondo was injured. And I say that 100% in jest, but yeah, you know what I'm talking about. The Celtics were without Kyrie Irving. They were without Marcus Morris. Now, Morris is going to be out for an extended period of time. I'm thinking 2 to 3 weeks. You shouldn't give a shit in 10-team leagues because he's not ownable. In 12-team leagues, you also don't care. He's not an ownable player in those situations. He's more a 14-team league guy. But with him out, it is going to open up some minutes. You're going to have Bainsey that's going to get some extra playing time. Vanilla Tice will get some extra playing time. You're going to have more minutes for Semi Ojeleye. You're going to have more minutes for Terry Rozier. You might say, well, how does losing a power forward make a point guard get more minutes? Because what it does is it pushes Jason Tatum down a position. It pushes Jaylen Brown down a position. It pushes Marcus Smart down a position as well, opening up more minutes in the backcourt there. So we get more Tatum at the four, more Brown at the three, and then Smart and Rozier play at the two, opening up the minutes that way. Now, as for Rozier, with Kyrie out and with Morris out, he played 28 minutes and had 13, 3, and 5 with three triples. 28 minutes is going to be on the high end for what he does when Kyrie comes back, so I don't think that he's going to be a strong add in 12-team leagues. Jaylen Brown, 13 and 8, didn't actually kill your free throw, so that's a bonus. While Jason Tatum, finally, and I like the kid, but finally he missed his threes. Like, for the first time in forever, every time I talk about it, he goes out there and is the greatest shooter of all time. 0 or 4 from three. So it turns out he is human, and that regression, it's going to hit. And it is going to hit in a significant way. You can talk all you want about, nah, man, he's good. He's form, man. His form's pure. You know what's pure? The bullshit that's coming out. He's not a 50% three-point shooter. I don't care what you say. I don't care how pure his form is. He's not shooting 50% from three in extended minutes as a rookie. It just isn't happening. And if it does happen, I don't even know what I'll do. I'll do something. I will shave my beard off live on this podcast if he finishes as a 50% three-point shooter this season. He had 4 and 10 with a steal and a block. I really like Tatum, but he's not doing that. Still, of course, is a must-own guy. The Celtics were just getting absolutely killed. So we saw, you know, rotation minutes for Jabari Bird, Kadeem Allen got in, Abdul Nadir played 16 minutes as well. On to the Bulls. No Lauri Markkanen, he was a late scratch with back tightness. So my boy, Nikola Mirotic, started, played 32 minutes, had 24 and 8, had 3 triples and a block. And you know what? He is good. I don't give a shit what anyone says. He is good. If PunchBob Shiploke hadn't have caved his face in, Mirotic would have had a big season in the past. And people said, oh yeah, he's been inconsistent in the past. That's because Højbjerg jerked him around and had no idea how to utilize him. Mirotic has some of the blame there. And he even said it after this game. You know, last year I was really trying to draw fouls. This year I don't care about fouls. I'm just attacking. I'm trying to shoot. And it's working for him. He is good. Now, the question is though, is he going to get enough playing time to be a standard league player? And I think in general, the answer is no. Like, he only needs 26 or 27 minutes to be a top 100 player. But will he even nudge that? I think that's going to be tough. Because when Markkanen comes back, he's going to come back and start. He'll play his 30 minutes. Mirotic will play 20, 21 off the bench. He's 100% a 14-team league guy. No doubt about that. And he possibly is... Maybe he's a back-end 12-team league guy. But I think you add him, and then in 20 minutes a night, you're going to be better off dropping it for the next hot guy that appears, or the next opportunity that opens up due to an injury or a trade. So while he can have some value there, it's not going to be sustained because he's just not going to keep a starting job or 30 minutes a night. Now, as for Shiploke, he played 23 minutes and he went off as well. 23 points for Bobby, 3 triples, 4 rebounds and 1 steal on 67% shooting. So much like Mirotic, that shooting's not going to continue. And we know that Portis is a massive flat track bully. He is a deeper league guy. Jerron Grant, 9 assists with 2 steals in his 23 minutes. He'd been really down in the playing time, but the garbage time allowed him to get back in. And everyone's favorite random person with an adjacent NW, David Nwaba, 27 minutes for him, 13 and 6 with a steal, 50% shooting from the field. Now, Nwaba's okay. He's a fine player. I just don't see him as a must-own 12-team league guy. I get lots of questions about him, and then he puts up a decent line. Oh, do you still don't like him, Josh? I think he's all right. I think he's fine. But I also think that lots of what he's doing is probably not something that can be continued. And for everything that he's doing, and for as good as he's been, he's 173rd ranked player this season. Over the last 4 games, he's 121st ranked player. Over the last 2 weeks, he's 151st ranked player. And that's with him shooting 68% from the field in the last 4 games. He's averaging 12.5 and 5, and that's fine. Shit free throw percentage on decent attempts. You know, low steals. Block numbers, which there is zero chance of him maintaining 1.5 blocks per game. I think he's hit 1-3 all season. So while he's fine, there is Denzel the Hammer Valentine there. There is Justin Holiday. There is the return of Zachy LaVine in January coming up as well. And someone is going to have to lose minutes. Now, Nwaba will still get his, but he won't get 30 a night. He won't get 25 a night, probably. And I just don't see it for him as a 12-team league guy. Great for deeper leagues. 16-teamers, fantastic. 14-teamers, maybe, but probably not. As for the Hammer, he wasn't great. 2, 6, and 3, but 30 minutes is an encouraging thing. But if you need to move on from him, do it. Justin Holiday, 8, 7, and 2 with 2 steals in 25 minutes. Another guy who is going to lose value when LaVine comes back and will possibly end up being a droppable player. The next game to look at was the Charlotte Hornets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Big win for the Hornets. The Thunder with another terrible loss. No Nick Batum for the Hornets. I've got multiple questions about Batum. Is he getting shut down? And I don't know if people say that to me to deliberately piss me off, because I hate the term shut down. It gets thrown around in fantasy circles at crazy, crazy levels. Is he getting shut down? Is he getting shut down? It happens. People ask me this, and the term shits me. It just absolutely irritates me. He's either injured and having season-ending surgery, or he's going to play. That's just what's going to happen. We're not in the middle of December with Charlotte just packing it in and saying, Nick, you're probably not hurt, but you're done. Like, it happened last year with Eric Bledsoe, and that was embarrassingly bad, and I just don't think anyone's going to put up with that shit anymore. So he's... No. And look, now, Batum did come out and say, look, my elbow's shitting me. It's bothering me. He probably didn't say it exactly the same as me. He probably said it with more of a French accent. It is shitting me. That's a terrible French accent. He says it's bothering me. I'm not 100% with the elbow. And it's, I'm in a lot of pain, and it's affecting what I can do. And that's a problem. But I don't think that means that he's going to be out for the season or anything like that. But the possibility is there. So if Jez Lamb is around, go and add him. If Batum is playing, Lamb playing 24 minutes a night, there's no point in him. But if he's going to start and play 33 and have 14 and 5, then just go and have a sneaky look. And like, I would much rather add Jez Lamb than David Nwaba. Much rather it. Kid Gilchrist went off. 34 minutes for Mick, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, 1 block, 8 of 9 shooting. Let's go through this. He won't shoot 8 of 9 from the field. He won't get 4 steals per game. So chalk this up to a big game and don't get overly excited about it, because he's just as likely to have 8 and 2 with 0 steals and 0 blocks in the next game. So leave him for the deeper leagues. He's fine as a streamer. That's really about it. Dwight was solid. Kemba was good. While Marv Williams had 18 and 7 with 4 triples. Again, a low impact, low upside player who's okay in 14s, okay in 12s. With the injury to Cody Zeller, it's going to push Frank the Tank Kaminsky over to center a little bit more, so that will open up some more minutes at the 4 for Marv, but it's nothing for me to go, man, he's an absolute 100% must-own player. Onto the Thunder, Westbrook had 34 and 7 with 3 steals. At least he hit all 9 of his free throws. Still a strong performance, while Paulie George returned, had 20 and 5 with 2 triples, just in time for his rematch against the Pacers. Steve Adams, 11 and 10 in 29 minutes, while Mallow had 11, 2 and 2. Mallow's struggling, we know that. Not droppable just yet, but he is struggling. There was no Andre Robertson, so Alex Abrines had another start. 12 points, nothing else, but did hit the 2 triples, so he is up there with the Duke and Tone Tolliver as those players who are available, who you know can hit 2 or 3 threes at any opportunity. But as soon as Robertson comes back, Abrines literally could be entirely out of the rotation, because that's something that was happening to him before these couple of injuries have given him a reprieve. Onto the Toronto Raptors, Jonas Valanciunas. I like Jonas Valanciunas. I have said this multiple times. I have railed against the use of Valanciunas by Dwayne Casey and some of his dipshittery. This is why. 23 and 15 for Jonas. 28 minutes. Love it. And you can love it as well. But how much faith do we have in Casey playing him 28 minutes a night? Your answer, it should be echoing back at me. It should be 0% faith. Because we have seen him get 19, 20 minutes a night for the last month or so with the occasional big game chucked in. So if you want to add him, fine. See if it sticks. He is a good player, but Casey just doesn't have that faith. Serge Ibaka, 17 and 6 with 3 blocks and 2 triples in 33 minutes. If he's on your wire, which he is in some cases, I'd add him. Jakob Poeltl with Valanciunas playing well, only 13 minutes. Well, Norm Powell, man, he is shitful at the moment. 12 minutes for Norm, while the Jedi OG Anunoby played 26, 3 and 2 for OG. I like him for deep dynasties. I don't like him for fantasy leagues for this year, really. DeMar DeRozan had 17, while Kyle Lowry, you know, quiet early, but at least got something happening later, 14, 3, and 5. Far from his best night. On the Clippers, Milos Teodosic is back. He started. He had a strict minutes limit. If he is on your wire, he is the guy that you add. You add him over Jez Lamb. You add him over David Nwaba. You add him over Marv Williams or Michael Kidd-Gilchrist or Frank the Tank Kaminsky. He is who you add. He will be the starting point guard for the rest of the season. He had 12 and 7 with 2 threes in this game in 20 minutes. If he gets 30 minutes a night, we're talking about a 7 to 8 assist game per game guy, 2 threes, 12 points, 1.5 type steals. This is the possibilities that you've got. You have to add Teodosic if he is around. Unfortunately, the positive news of Milos coming back is that we had the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, out again with an injured glute. This time, the other side of his ass is injured. He fell and hurt that in the game the other day. He was an extraordinarily late report in terms of that injury. So with him out, Wes Johnson continued starting, and we had Jamil Wilson start at the 4 along with Wes, but those two combined to play under 30 minutes in a, sorry, not true, 6 seconds over 30 minutes. Both guys struggled. We saw Sam Decker come out of the dead, 27 minutes for Sam, 12 and 5 with a steal, and the table, Montrezl Harrell, 17 and 4 with 2 blocks in 16 minutes. I don't expect Harrell to be able to score at that sort of a level in those limited minutes every night. And B, he did hurt his knee towards the end of the game. Stayed in, but it is something to monitor. I'm not adding Decker. I'm not adding Harrell. Johnson's okay for his defensive numbers in standard leagues. Sindarius Thornwell. I do like Thornwell. Long term, he played 23 minutes here, which was somewhat of a surprise. In this game, wasn't expecting him to play that much with Milos back here. But he did. Nothing much to really see with that moving forward. Lou Williams, he was strong again. 17, 5, and 5. Or DeAndre Jordan had 14, 7, and 4 with 2 blocks and a steal. Let's get on to the last game of the night. Another game, just wacky stuff going on. The Portland Trailblazers and the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors were without Draymond Green, who went from probable to out, weirdly. Patrick McCaw was questionable. He was playing, and then he was the third string point guard. The Blazers were without Mo Harkless and Yusuf Nurkic, and then Shabazz Napier was a DNPCD for the second consecutive game in another weird change of the lineup. The Warriors still got the victory because, of course, they did. Lillard had 39-4 with 5 triples, and McCollum had 21-3, so decent games from those guys. While Evan Turner started in place of Mo and had 10 points with 4 assists and 3 steals. Now, Harkless is likely back the next game or the one after that. Nothing to really see for either Turner or for Harkless or Pat Connaughton, who played 23 minutes. Al-Farouq Aminu, normally he does okay against the Warriors. Wasn't the case here. 25 minutes for him, 4-5. This is why I wasn't super high on him as an absolute, you know, sell the farm to make sure you go and add him type of a player. We saw an extended look of Zach Collins. This is why I like him. 9-7 in 25 minutes, 3 steals. He did foul out in that time, but I do like him long-term for Dynasty. It's not going to really happen this season. He can play the 4 and the 5. He's won for like 3 years' time, but I like him in those deeper league type formats. So someone to just keep an eye on. Jake Layman looks to have replaced Shabazz Napier in the rotation. 17 minutes for Layman, 8-3. Onto the Warriors, they started Omri Caspi, they started Jordy Bell, they started Sean Livingston. Jordan Bell, 26 minutes, 11-6, a steal and a block. This literally is one of the dumbest things of all time. The Bulls sold this guy for cash. That's the final straw of why I just said this organization's a shit show. That is ridiculous. Bell, I think there's a minuscule chance that he is a starting center for this team this year. I don't think it will happen. But I think if it did happen, I wouldn't be like, oh, what? How did that happen? Because I think he's good. Now, he played 26 minutes in this one because Zaza and Draymond Green were both out. I think he goes back to a 13-minute role in the next game, which is probably not enough to own him in 12-team leagues. And again, if you're stashing him, you're hoping for a Draymond injury. And if that case, you might as well stash anybody who's playing back up to anybody else. And nobody really else who's available has the per-minute production ability that what Jordy Bell does. But I just think his path to getting those minutes on a consistent enough basis, it isn't really all that clear. Klay Thompson had 24, Kevin Durant had 28, 9-5 with 3 blocks, while Caspi had 11-9 in a surprise start in his 25 minutes. While Livingston, I don't care that he's starting for Steph Curry, 24 minutes, 6-2. Pat McCaw played 17 minutes, while Quinn Cook played 10. So I feel pretty safe in saying that none of these guys are going to have standard league value. As for Uncle P, he left with a concussion, 12 points with 2 triples in 13 minutes for Nick Young. But with everyone healthy, he's not likely going to be an every night rotation guy, but we're a long way away from having everyone healthy, with Steph obviously still struggling with that ankle problem. That does it for all the games for Monday. I'm going to take a quick break now, get myself a drink, get myself sorted, transition into DFS mode to talk about Tuesday's action. And we'll do that now. We'll have a song by the band Big School, and the song is called After Dark. Let's take a look at the perfect DFS lineup. I probably should have explained, actually, that the title of today's show, it's regarding, you can probably see it in the show notes if you're reading this, about Clint Capella. When you're writing the word Clint, you have to be really super careful, especially if you're doing it as like a big headline, about what font you use. You've got to be really careful about that kerning. If that L and the I get really close next to each other, it's a censor's worst nightmare. So anyone with the name Clint, I'm sure you're well aware of the font based issues associated with your name. And for those of you that don't know, kerning is the art of typesetting. I'm pretty sure that's the description of it. So I don't know if I can work that into a nickname, but whenever I see Clint, I just think really got to watch the kerning there on the old Clintster. On FanDuel, the perfect DFS lineup: Dame Lillard 52.8, Chrissy Paul 49.8, Jim Harden 67.7, and Drew Holiday 62.3. Mick Kidd Gilchrist 42.8, Chandler Parsons 28.3, Nikola Mirotic 36.6, Punch Bob Shiploke 32.3, and Jonas Valanciunas at 41 for a total of 413.6 for $59,000. On DraftKings, it was Jim Harden for 66.75. Chrissy Paul for 48.75. Etuan Moore at 85. Not 85. That's his 3-point percentage. 45.75. Mirotic 37.5. Valanciunas 43.75. Drew had 60.5. Kid Gilchrist 38. And Rajon Rondo had 48 for a total of 389. And that cost $49,900. All right, let's talk DFS. We'll start things off with the first game of the night, and that is the Denver Nuggets and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are favored by 7 in this one, and the total is 208.5 points. We know that Nikola Jokic has already been ruled out for the Denver Nuggets, and Paul Millsap, of course, is out for the next few months with that wrist problem. At point guard, we're looking at Reg Jackson. He is at 6,100, has struggled and mightily struggled in that last game, only playing 19 minutes. At 6,100 in a pretty okay matchup, for as bad as we think Denver's defense is, they aren't a team that allows point guards to really go off. But they're not a team that also clamps down on them. At 6,100 on a 7-game slate, I reckon you can do better than Reggie. I think you could consider him a GPP guy, but I don't love him as a cash option. As for Ish Smith, he had a big game in the last one, but nothing to really look too much at there. While the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, 5,200. Murray has struggled. We know that all season. If you're going to use him, it's only going to be as a tournament guy. I don't feel strongly about him on cash at 5,200. There's something there, but it's not a huge amount. At shooting guard, it's Gaz Harris. Nice, Gary! He's been really consistent in what he's been doing. You feel like you just know what you're going to get out of Gaz. You're going to get about 30 points every night. And at $6,000, that's sort of bang on where it needs to be. So a rock solid shooting guard. Farton Will Barton at 7,800. With Jokic out, I expect him to start. I expect him to play a lot of minutes, and I expect him to have an ability to go for 40 points. So that makes him a fairly strong play for me as well. Avery Bradley, not his best season. We know that. At 5,300, he does still have that 35 point upside, but there's no way that you can really rely upon him as a floor type of guy. Luke Kennard, Malik Beasley. Beasley's maybe been playing some minutes lately, but not really enough there for DFS. Wilson Chandler, old baby neck, 4,400 for Wilson. Big game from him in the last one. He hadn't really been anywhere near that prior. If you're going to use him, it's tournaments only. I don't feel good about him as a cash option. While Stan Johnson has just been really just putrid. At power forward, Ken Faried, 5,500. I'm not sure how high his upside is, Ken, but I think that he's a pretty strong cash type play with Jokic out. We could get more Trey Lyles like we had in the last game. He's at 4,800. But I think Faried at 5,500 is a decent bet to at least get you around that 25 point mark and maybe get up to 30. Toby Harris, 7,300 on FanDuel. That's too expensive. I'm not interested in that. Tone Tolliver, who has been getting some extra minutes lately, he's at 3,800. I just don't really see the upside in him. At center, Andre Drummond, 9,200. I'm not sure that Mason Plumlee is going to really be able to do much to slow him down. Now, he was disgustingly bad in the last game, Drummond, and thankfully that's dropped his salary by $300. I really like him here. I think this is a good spot for him, and I think that his ownership will be a little bit lower based on what he did in the last game, and I'm obviously not getting too interested in looking at big Mace Plumlee. Let's have a look over on DraftKings, how things pan out, or if it's any different over there. Drummond is still a good option, not as quite a good on FanDuel. At 9,400, he's more expensive, and they've actually bumped his price up on DraftKings as opposed to FanDuel, but I still think that he's a good spot to use him. Whereas I love Farton Will Barton, 7,400 for him, a strong, strong cash play. Toby Harris also more in play on DraftKings at 6,600, and Gaz Harris, the opposite, 6,700, so less appealing to use Gaz over on DraftKings as opposed to FanDuel. Ken Faried also strong. He's a cash option at 5,200, while the Blue Arrow at 55, I'd only be using him as a tournament guy because he can go for 50, but in all likelihood, he's not, and that doesn't give him a huge amount of usability. Let's move on now to the next game. It is, who is it? It's the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and just I want to say one thing about jerseys. If you haven't seen it already, You need to check out, it's the every team had got at least four jerseys they're going to have this season. We've seen the association ones, we've seen the icon ones, we've seen the statement jerseys, and the next one we're going to see are the ones called the city. And these are the ones that are super interesting to me. If you go over onto sportslogos.net, I wish I could remember the bloke's name. Duncan, I think his name is, has been doing mock-ups of these jerseys based on information that he has been passed. And he tells you on the picture, like, I am 100% sure this is the color scheme. I'm 100% sure this is the logo. 75% sure this is the pattern. And then he also saw that a lot of the hats based on these statement jerseys have been released, and they tie in very well with what he's done. In saying all this, go and check out these jerseys, because, you know, the Nike jerseys, most of them, it's just been exactly what we had prior in the Adidas section. These new ones, out of control. The Atlanta Hawks one, it's getting close to what I wanted. If you've been listening to the show for a while, I just said, I want that vault green. I just want a pure vault green jersey. Their city jersey, according to it's Conrad Duncan. I wish I could remember. I apologize, heartily for not, I'm going to look this up because it's bothering me that I don't know, but I don't know your name. Duncan or Conroy or what is it? Wow, where is it? That is so frustrating to me. Let's have a look. See if I can bring it up. I know I'm doing this live here because I'm trying to give this guy the proper credit. Here it is. Conrad. It is Conrad. Conrad Bury. I don't know where I got Duncan from. Yeah, so he's got a post on the hats that have been released today, and they really tie in with these new jerseys. And I'm going completely off track here, but the Hawks one is black with vault or neon green on it, which is going to look, some of the jerseys look sick. The Miami Heat one, crazy. The Chicago Bulls, white with red and pale blue, looks awesome. I really like them. I can 100% guarantee you that the majority of you listening are going to hate them. People hate on jerseys for reasons that really astound me. The Warriors one looks unbelievably good to me with a Chinese New Year dragon on the front. People hate it, and I don't get it. I really, really like these jerseys that they're putting out for this, what's it called, for the city jerseys, and I just go check it, sportslogos.net, and go check it. If you go to the news section, you can see the post about the hats, and then that links to the jersey mock-ups, which looks fantastic. Completely off track. Atlanta and Cleveland, no spread out currently for this one. The Baptist is back, maybe. He is questionable for this one. Tristan Thompson is also likely back for the Cavs. Kevin Love is listed as questionable, while Lukey Babbitt is listed as probable. Obviously, if the Baptist returns, that does impact guys like Ersan Ilyasova, Miles Plumlee, but it's mainly Ilyasova, the one that's going to have really too much of a DFS impact. Of course, Kevin Love being out impacts DFS in a big, big way. It would also improve the Baptist's ability to play more minutes, I think, without having to worry of fouling Kevin Love. And it would also increase the ability to use a guy like Jay Crowder if Love and Tristan Thompson happen to be out, but Thompson is likely going to be back. Let's talk point guards. Dennis Schroeder has done pretty well against the Cavs in the past. He is at 7,900, so a nice price reduction there. I'm interested in using him here. He's had a pretty decent record against the Cavs with a 35-point average in the last three games against them. On the Cavs side of things for point guards, we're talking Jose Calderon, so not too interested there. Obviously, back to Schroeder, he sat out, you know, the fourth quarter of the last game, so he does... not something to prove, but more that people will be off him, I guess, and looking at that and going, yeah, maybe we're not going to be interested in using him. I am interested. At shooting guard, Ballinelli, no. Dwayne Wade, 5,300. Love that price on FanDuel. It's a big, big drop. He has been a little bit underwhelming lately. If Love is out, I'd be all over using Dwayne Wade. If Love is in, there's still some value there at that sort of a price. Well, Kent Bazemore at 55, he is a guy who loves playing the Cavs, always gets up to play against Cleveland. He's got a 32-point average the last three times against them. I really think that he is a guy that you, and I don't really say this all that often with Kent Bazemore, but I think that you can consider him a cash guy. Kyle Korver is always a GPP option. He's priced at 3,600, can go off and hit those threes. At small forward, it is LeBron James. He's at 12,600. That is really high. I probably look at him more as a tournament guy at that price, because you do have to find a number of really cheap options to put around him. But if you can do it in cash, you're going to get 55 out of him, almost 60, pretty much guaranteed. And that's great value, but you have to be able to find the other guys around him. So that's why I can't go in here and say LeBron is a lock, you've got to play him, because if you can't find the right guys around him, then it's not the right way to go in cash. And that's really key in DFS. And people will often say, oh, do you have this guy that you play every time? Like, no, I don't, because it really depends on who else is around and what prices they are. Every DFS slate is a completely different thing, and you should look at it all with a blank slate, a blank page, a blank idea about how you're going to fit these guys together. Because if you go, oh, LeBron was good for me last game, yeah, that's great, but he's bumped up by $600. And it depends on how other value opened up. Have injuries created starters playing at $3,500? Because in that case, then LeBron and those guys makes a ton of sense in cash. But if you've got to use him in cash and surround him with Jose Calderon or Kyle Korver to fit them in, and then maybe it's not going to be the right way to go about it. So that's important to note. We've got the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince at 5,700. I feel pretty good that a 30-pointer is coming his way, so I think he is a decent cash option. The matchup for him, it's okay, obviously, against LeBron. It's not ideal, but he has been able to have a decent level of success, and he's played okay recently. So I do think that the Taurean at 5,700 is worth looking at. At power forward, the Baptist, 6,200 on FanDuel. That's really tough to use. First game back, if he's going to play at all. 6,200 is tough. The time he played the Cavs last time, he had 31 points in 25 minutes, so really able to get that. But that's a high price, and that's probably fade-ish to me. Well, Jay Crowder at 4,100. Love's out, so Crowder becomes... If Love is out, sorry, then Jay does come into your GPP. Well, shit, Jay would come into even your cash considerations if Love happens to be out. As for Ersan Ilyasova, the man who is shooting as hot as anybody who isn't named Etuan Moore at the moment, he is at... What is he at? 5,900. I cannot say enough how much that is too high. He hit 10 of his 11 threes over the weekend, giving him some big numbers. But with the Baptist likely returning, A, the minutes might be squeezed a little bit, and he's just not going to shoot that well. He just isn't. And that price is really, really big for Ersan, and I think that's got DFS disaster written all over it. At center, Kevin Love at 8,000. If he's in, I think it's worth a look, but I don't feel super strongly about Love. He hasn't had the best record against the Hawks in his recent outings, but I think this is an okay spot to use him if he is ready to go. Whilst Tristan Thompson, I'm not going to be looking at him in his first game back. Really, very limited interest in Tristan Thompson as a player. On DraftKings, Schroeder at 7,600, I think is a pretty decent play there. I like LeBron much, much better on DraftKings. 11,800. I feel better about using that in cash and of course, in tournaments also. Kent Bazemore, much, much the same as on FanDuel. 5,300 for Kent is a pretty strong cash option too with some tournament upside. Now, the Baptist John Collins is at 5,500 on DraftKings. So that's a much more appealing price. I think that with that 40-point upside, he absolutely should be in your tournament type, tournament player pool. And, formally, Taurean Prince at 5,400. Probably lean a little bit more towards him as being a GPP guy on DraftKings rather than a cash play, while Kyle Korver, of course, is that GPP guy on both sites. Ersan Ilyasova, not quite as high on DraftKings. He's still at 5,200. So there is an element of usability there for Ersan, and I would feel much more comfortable using him if the Baptist is out. But at that price on DraftKings, it is a little bit more sexier than what we have for him over on FanDuel. The next game, the Lakers and the New York Knicks. The Knicks are favored by 3.5, and the total is 213 points here. Point guards. Frank Ntilikina. Decent minutes for him in the last couple of games. He's getting the assists. He can get the steals. He's at sub 4,000. I think he's worth looking at. Now, he'd be one of those guys that I would feel okay about in putting next to LeBron. You got your 12-6 for LeBron, and I think you can get 22 or 23 out of Frank at that 3,900 price tag. And you get that. That's really returning some decent value in cash. So I do like that. Lonzo Ball at 7,300. Really hard to rely upon him on a game-to-game basis. 45, 50-point upside, sure. But reliability makes him a tournament-only sort of a player. Jarrett Jack at 48. He's been all right recently, putting up some okay numbers. I don't really think the upside is really through the roof for Jack, but there is some cash reliability to get you around that 25-point mark. At shooting guard, we've got Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at 58. It's too high for KCP. Just not interested in him at that price. Well, Jordy Clarkson's at 5,300. Just continually, surprising with what he does. He is a little bit up and down, but I don't think that's a bad cash play, especially against the Knicks. Courtney Lee shit the bed in the last game, just 5 points at 5,400, though I'm ready to get back on him. I think he's a fine cash option and another guy that could make it so that you could fit LeBron in, while Brando Ingram up to 7,100, because he's been playing really well lately, 35-point average across his last five, which would make sense for the $7,000 price tag. Now, can he do it every game? No. Is there a chance to do it against the Knicks? Absolutely there is. So I think that he, at 7,100, has some really strong value with that 32-33-point, probably a 32-point floor, to be honest, given the way that he's currently going. Doug McDirt had a decent game in the last one, but we know what his story is. If the shots don't fall, then nothing actually comes of what he does. So he is a tough guy to consider a cash play. At power forward, Kristaps Porzingis. He is at 9,700. That is extraordinarily high. It's the Lakers who have been quite good defensively, but power forwards have been able to put up some okay numbers against them this year. You know, Kuzma, Nance, Randall, I don't really think any of them are going to be providing a massive defensive challenge for Porzingis. So he's worth a look, but in cash, I feel that's too high to spend on Kristaps, so more of a tournament guy. Whereas Julius Randle, out of the Kuzma, Nance, Randle trio, Randle's the guy that I like the most here, as weird as that sounds. I feel a little bit more happy with the consistency in his minutes. He's at 5,300, and I feel like getting 25 out of him is a realistic proposition. Whereas Nance and Kuzma, who knows what I'm going to get in terms of minutes and production, because they've been a little bit all over the place lately. At center, Enes Kanter, 6,600. Not a terrible matchup for Enes, but the hip is a little bit bothersome, so he's a fade with me. Kylo Quinn, or Brooke Lopez, 4,400. I can't rely upon it, and I'm not sure his upside's high enough to really consider a GPP guy. On DraftKings, Ntilikina at 3,600, that's pretty cheap, and that is, you could use that in cash, probably more of a tournament guy, but you could use him in cash. And then Lonzo's at 66. That is bordering on using him in cash. I'm not quite there with it, but I do like him a lot for tournaments. And there's a bunch of guys I do like in cash here. Jordy Clarkson at 49, Courtney Lee at 57. I like Julius Randle at 4,800. Again, the consistency in his minutes is important. And Brandon Ingram at 6,700, while Porzingis at 8,500. Really, really like that on DraftKings for cash. I think that's a strong, strong play to use Kristaps over on DK. The next game we're going to take a look at is the Washington Wizards and the Brooklyn Nets. It is going to be most likely the Brooklyn debut of Jahlil Okafor and Nick Stauskas. John Wall could also be returning. The Wizards are favored by 3 and the total is 212. We don't know the status of Yan Mahinmi, so if he is out, that opens up a few things for guys like Markieff Morris, but more importantly for Marcin Gortat. At point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie's at 7,000. I'm not sure if there's much upside for Spencer there, but I think that in terms of floor, it's pretty strong. So I really think that's a solid cash option. As Johnny Wall at 9,300, well, it's really hard to lock him in cash when we don't know if he's going to play. If he was going to play, it is a super matchup. So you could look at him as a tournament sort of guy. Tomas Satoransky's at 4,500. Will he remain the backup point guard? I feel it's incompetent coaching if he doesn't. Maybe that's being a little bit harsh on Scotty Brooks, but he has outplayed Tim Frazier in literally every single game since John Wall's been out. But if when Wall is back, if they go to Frazier as the backup, that is a poor and that is an incorrect decision from Scott Brooks. So we'll see how that pans out. If Wall is out at 4,500, you could look at Satoransky, but it's not a strong, strong play. At shooting guard, Caris LeVert killing it at the moment. Backup point guard playing the two, 6,100 for him. I've liked what he's done of late. I think there's a real chance for him to get 30, and the slate, I think, you know, allows him to be fitted into it to a lot of cases. Bradles Beal at 8,600. If Wall plays, I think that's just too high for Beal, and I wouldn't want anything to do with it. At small forward, the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, 4,500. No. I'm just not interested. Damari Carroll at 5,700. A little bit hard to rely upon him, given we don't know the impact that Okafor is going to have. Not the same position, clearly, but it does change a few things. Maybe it eliminates the Rondae Hollis-Jefferson minutes at the 5, which would then reduce some of Damari's minutes at the 4. And that could have sort of a negative flow-on effect that way. Otto Porter's at 7,400. No interest. Kelly Oubre at 45. In a tournament, maybe, for Oubre. And maybe that increases if if Mahinmi is out, you've got to play more Morris at the 5, enabling more of those Oubre-Porter lineups. So in a GPP, if Mahinmi is out, maybe Oubre could sneak in at power forward, Hollis Jefferson at 7,200. Love what he's been doing. But again, like Carroll, I'm just not sure of the Okafor impact. So it's a tougher one. Markeith at 51. If we hear Mihinmi's out, I'd be all over Markeith at that price, even though he dropped 3 points in the last game. I think that he's got a 27 or 30 point outburst coming with 40 point upside in a great, great matchup. But that's really only if Mihinmi is out. At center, as for Okafor, 5,200. Who knows what to expect from Jahlil here. Absolutely worth putting into a GPP pool, though, because we don't know. No one knows exactly what we're going to get. If I had to bet on it one way, I'd say that he probably doesn't have a great game, but who knows? So he's worth having a look, and that price is definitely not restrictive. As for Gortat at 4,700, all over that if Mihinmi is out, smash it. Otherwise, he's just a tournament type of guy. Really tough to use Jarrett Allen in this situation as well, given the uncertainty with how Okafor's role is going to go. On DraftKings, yeah, very similar sort of scenario. Gortat's at 5,200, so a little bit more expensive, but Mihinmi's out, we're all over it. Morris at 5,100, the same story. Well, Jahlil, you could make an argument to use him for cash, given how cheap he is at 4,200. I don't want to be the one to make that argument, because he could be just delightfully shitful and not be able to get to those 20 points. I feel pretty bloody good, though, about him at 4,200. And I am not the biggest Jahlil Okafor fan, as you're well aware. Love Spencer Dinwiddie at 6,100 here. Absolutely love that. That is a super price for him. Well, Hollis Jefferson, I talked about the uncertainty, but his price is down to 5,800 on DraftKings. That is a really, really good price, and I like that a ton. There is so much value on DraftKings yet again, as pretty much is the case every slate, with more value appearing on the DraftKings side of things as opposed to FanDuel. Philadelphia and Minnesota, the next game. We don't know the status of a few players. Bob Cove for the Sixers, TJ McConnell for the Sixers, although he's likely going to play, and then Joel Embiid is questionable with back tightness. Embiid said that he is going to play, so there's not too much for us to worry about there. Covington, I'd be pretty stunned if Covington does play. And as for McConnell, it looks like McConnell is going to be back, but we're not 100% certain on TJ. Just at this point, obviously, if Embiid and Covington are both out, you got Rashawn Holmes, you got Amir Johnson, you got Trevor Booker, who are all going to pick up value. And I think all of them were in the perfect lineup the other day, so they're all going to have value there. So it is something to pay some attention to. Onto the Timberwolves, Nemanja Bjelica, I don't think there's any chance that he plays, and that bumps Taj Gibson and Gorgie Jang's playing time up, along with Townsie. At point guard, TJ is at 4,200. I wouldn't be interested really in using him. I think that McConnell is going to play, to be honest. Jared Bayless, 37. Tyus Jones, no interest. And Jeff Teague at 6,500.
My name is Jeff.
Has been pretty piss poor lately, but I think the upside is there. I wouldn't want to use him in cash, though. At shooting guard, Wigan, speaking of piss poor, he is down to 5,900 on FanDuel. And rightfully so, he's averaging 21 points over the last five games. In any situation, I would use him is tournaments only, but I do think that he has got a great chance to be a low-owned guy that can go off and pop in a 40, but he has been as putrid comes. JJ Redick at that, Redick's been fine, but I just think he's priced too high. At small forward, Jim Butler, speaking of price too high, 9,000 is probably a little bit too high, but if there's any time I'm going to use Butler at that price, it's going to be against the Sixers. Has demolished them in the past. 58-point average in the last three games. He is averaging 47 over his last five. He's playing 40 minutes a night. This is the time to use him if you are going to get Butler into a lineup. Bjelica, Bob Cove, I wouldn't be using either of those guys, even if they're ready to play. At power forward, Taj at 5,300. Love that for cash. Absolutely love it. All over Taj on FanDuel. While Benny Simmons at 10,000. Fine with that as well. I think it's almost a guaranteed 45 points for Simmons. And when his floor is 4.5x, I think you should be really happy about using him in cash. And there is some significant tournament value in him as also. Of course, is Šarić at 6,400. If we have Embiid and Covington out, he gets a little bit of a boost, but still really only be a tournament option. While Amir, Rashawn, and Trevor, all their prices have bumped up. Holmes to 4,500, Johnson to 4,000, and Booker to 53. But you could consider using all of those guys if Embiid and Covington are out. The guy you'd want to use there is Holmes. He'd be the pick of that bunch. But if everyone is healthy, if Covington and Embiid both play, it is really tough to consider any of those guys usable players. As for centers, Embiid's at 10,800. I'd probably fade Embiid here at that sort of a price, while Karl Anthony Towns, 9,700, has been playing a little bit better of late, but I don't really love relying upon him given the offensive vagaries of the Timberwolves and the fact that he has struggled a little bit against Embiid in the past. I think even when he played against Jahlil Okafor in Philadelphia, he had struggled previously against them. On to DraftKings. I like Townsie more here at 8,700, but still I don't feel confident in his floor for cash games, so he's more of a tournament guy. Whereas Simo at 9,800, I think that's really, really strong, super floor for him there. While Jim Butler at 8,000 is possibly the pick of the day on DraftKings. Love him at 8,000. And Jeff Teague at 6,500. I feel a little bit more comfortable about Teague given the scoring system, but I don't feel overly enthused about using him. Wigo at 6,000, you can throw him into a tournament mix, and the same sort of story with Holmes, Johnson, and Booker. They're all priced fairly well. Johnson at 36, Holmes at 38, and Booker at 43. You can look at them in tournaments if we don't get word on Embiid and Covington, but if those two guys are ruled in, then you rule those guys out of your lineups. Over to the next game. It is the San Antonio Spurs and the Dallas Mavericks, and Kawhi is back, probably. We're going to get Manu back. We're going to get Tone Parker back. We're going to get Pau Gasol back. They all rested in the last game. Dan Green is probable with left groin tightness, and Kawhi is going to make his season debut, probably. Now, Kawhi will play, but he will play limited minutes. There is no way he's coming in and playing 35 a night, so don't get your hopes up, anything like that. So not really a great DFS option. For Dallas, we know that Dennis Smith is out. So JJ Barea has seen his price drop significantly, 5,400. That means I'm on him. He can go off for big 35, 40-point nights. I'm on him as a tournament guy in FanDuel, while Tone Parker, zero. Yogi Ferrell at 4,500, probably a little bit too high. He just is not producing really numbers at all. But with Smith out and him starting, there's some GPP upside there for Yogi. Pat Mills at 42, I don't really see much there. At shooting guard, we've got Devin Harris, no. Danny Green, no. Wes Matthews, probably not. There's not a huge amount of DFS action in this game, to be honest. At small forward, the pencil, Harrison Barnes. No upside in Harrison Barnes, but I think there's a decent floor and enough that you could consider him a cash option, whereas Kawhi's at 7,000. I just want nothing to do with a guy who's probably going to play 20 minutes at that sort of a price tag. Rudy Gay at 5,300 loses a fair chunk of his appeal with Kawhi Leonard back as well. At power forward, Maxi Kleber. 3,800 for Maxi. He's averaging 21 over his last five and 27 over his last three. The minutes are pretty consistent. I think that he's got 30-point upside here, and I think that he's worth a GPP look, but I don't feel good about cash. Whereas cash for Dirk, 4,800, I feel like Dirk in cash is not a bad option. Dwight Powell, the other power forward. LaMarcus Aldridge, 83. I don't feel comfortable about using LaMarcus with Kawhi back. Just an uncertain fit. He might put up 40 points, but I'm not sure his upside's high enough or his floor is high enough to really consider him too much of a GPP guy. And then at center, we've got Powell and we've got Salah Mejri, and they're both fadeaways to me. On DraftKings, again, a very similar story. Kleber as a tournament play at 3,600 with a little bit of upside there, while Barea I do like quite a bit at 5,100. And then for cash, it's the pencil Harrison Barnes at 63 and Dirk Nowitzki at 46. Very similar as we have it on FanDuel, while Yogi Ferrell, I really like Yogi on DraftKings, 3,800. That's a super cheap price for a guy who's probably going to play in excess of 30 minutes. Might not get more than 25 points, but 25 points at 3,800, it should be considered a win. Let's go on to the last game of the night now. It is the Phoenix Suns and the Sacramento Kings. This game has thrown up some wacky numbers over the past couple of years. If you remember back to last season, Scalabissier went for like, I don't know, 89 points in a quarter or something stupid like that. It wasn't 89, but it was a bananas game. So who knows what this is going to turn up. Willie Cauley-Stein is questionable, so therefore Jack Cooley and Jakar, I am not going to play him to hinder the development of other players, but play him 25 minutes a night. Samson have been sent back down to the G League, so that gives me every indication that Cauley-Stein is going to play. George Hill missed the last game for personal reasons, but he practiced, so I've got no reason to suspect that George won't play. And of course, the Phoenix Suns center rotation, who knows? Will Greg Monro play?
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Mainly, I wanted to play the Greg Monro drop, but he's played three games in a row. That's way too many in a row for a Suns centre. And with Len back and Chandler back from his personal issues, I reckon this could be Monro's turnout. So by all means, use him, but use him only in a tournament. I think this could be the... Or do they go back to the 2028 theory that they spouted and then never used? Nothing makes sense with this team. Speaking of not making sense, the point guards, Tyler Ulis at 4,800. He played 19 minutes in the last game after 35 the previous game. He has got upside. In fact, pretty much everyone in this game can have GPP value because we just don't know how any of these dicks are going to run anything. Mike James, who'd been phased out of the rotation pretty much and then came back and scored 37 in 29 minutes, he's a GPP option. This is, I don't even know if it's worth breaking down this game by position because there's just nothing that's consistent with any of these people. Actually, that's not true. I like Budrick Hield. He's at 5,500. I think that he has got some decent cash value. And if you wanted to use a cash option in a game, which could be a disaster defensively, yeah, Budrick would be the guy that I'd look at. Troy Daniels, Garrett Temple, he's starting and seeing his minutes reduce, which is a really good thing as well. At small forward, Joshy Jackson will likely start. He's at 4,700. You shouldn't have any faith in him. He can go off, but we've really yet to see too much evidence of that. So, yeah, tournaments only. Well, TJ Warren at 8,000. We love the increased usage with Booker out, but he's not really doing anything with it. 24-point average over his last three, and I think that that price is just too high to use him. At power forward, we have got not much. Marquise Chris at 4,600, playing better, giving him credit for that. Definitely playing better lately, so I do like him as a tournament guy. Zach Randolph's at 7,500. With Cauley Stein returning, surely he's not going to play 35 minutes a night, so I think 7,500 is probably too high for Zebo. While LeBissiere at 3,500, great record against this team. In a GPP minimum salary, who knows, but more likely he'll play 15 minutes and not be developed. At centre, Kufos, 3,600, probably not. While Will Cauley-Stein at 6,000, well, I don't know if he's going to play. That's a number one query, but I would consider him a tournament-type guy. Same with Alex Len at 4,900. Just really a massive, massive shit show this entire game will be. On DraftKings, it's a little bit different. I like TJ Warren in cash at 69. I like Zach Randolph in cash at 71. And I like Tyson Chandler in cash at 45. And then you've got more of those tournament guys. Joshy Jackson, Marquise Chris, Tyler Ulis, Mike James, Will Cauley-Stein. All of these guys have got that bit of upside. But in terms of how it's going to shake out, this is probably the game where you're relying upon these players in cash formats is a really tough thing to do. Let's have a look at some other plays on the other sides. Yahoo, let's look at some cash plays. Porzingis, Towns, Butler, TJ Warren, Budrick, Jarrett Jack, Marquise Chris, Frank Mason, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Frank Ntilikina, Yogi Ferrell. And for tournament guys, Tone Tolliver, Maxi Kleber, Trey Lyles, Mike James, Josh Jackson, Tyler Ulis, Avery Bradley, Caris LeVert. For there on Yahoo, over on Moneyball, for tournaments, Kleber, Baby Neck, Frank Ntilikina, Lyles, LeBron, Lonzo, Cauley-Stein, Jahlil Okafor. And for cash plays, we've got Kent Bazemore, Marcin Gortat, Drummond, TJ Warren, Gaz Harris, Yogi Ferrell, Porzingis, Dirk, Randall, Budrick, Toby, and Marquise Chris. And then over on Draft Stars for cash, it's Ulis, Okafor, Fareed, Ntilikina, Josh Jackson, Tone Tolliver, Toby Harris, Dinwiddie, Yogi Ferrell, TJ Warren, Farton, Will Barton, Kristaps, The Pencil, Dennis Schroeder, Andre Drummond. And for tournaments, Townsy, Lyles, LeBron, Lonzo, Wilson Chandler, Marquise Chris, Will Cauley-Stein, Maxi Kleber, and JJ Barea. Don't forget, leave a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts, and you can find the podcast on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube, where you can give it a thumbs up and subscribe over there as well. And check out Basketball Monster, LockedOnFantasyBasketball.com as well, and the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Nikola Mirotić.